Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I am a former middle school teacher. I'm a current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And I genuinely believe that teachers are the most critical element when it comes to students reaching that creative potential. And so on this podcast, we explore strategies and ideas. I share stories of what works, but also stories of mistakes I've made along the way. And I just want to say today's topic is directly about creativity. It's about this idea of how we assess creativity. So here's the deal. When I wear my Apple Watch, I pay a greater attention to my activity level throughout the day. I find myself standing up to move more in order to get that like little move circle closed. It's embarrassing, but it's what I do. I make sure that I am standing at least once an hour. By contrast, when I'm not wearing my watch, I tend to sit down more often. Those visual cues not only provide data, but they also change my behavior. Similarly, for the last 18 months, I've tracked what I eat so I don't unintentionally fall back to old habits of mindlessly overeating or even choosing junk food as my go-to when I'm feeling anxious. See, I've lost about 55 pounds at this point, and for the last 6 months or so, I've kind of kept off those pounds. I haven't lost more weight, maybe a pound or two, but it's not about weight and it's not about pounds. It was about fundamentally changing my relationship with food. I was an emotional eater. I was somebody who would go to that to food as a reward, or go to food as some kind of comfort, like a security blanket. And I realized I had to really rethink the way that I thought about food. And part of doing that was to pay attention to what I actually eat. And the tracking of that helped change my behavior. I'm not saying everyone should track calories. In fact, I think most people probably shouldn't track their calories. But for me, I had to do it because what I was doing wasn't working. Now, I noticed this in other areas of my life. I have progress bars that I use. I actually sketch them out on my whiteboard, and I use those to gauge whether I'm on track for various projects. Whether intentional or not, I notice the percentage of my likes and dislikes on my YouTube videos. That's another example of data. But it's not just quantitative data. When I am intentional about like reflecting on how I'm doing as a dad, I am more likely to set boundaries on my time and to plan activities that my kids can do with me. When my wife and I have those deep, hard conversations about marriage, we're both more intentional about spending quality time together or writing notes to each other or planning date nights, which has admittedly been really hard during the pandemic. While I wouldn't tend to think of hard conversations or time spent with kids as assessments, at the core, that's what they really are. Every time that you're reflecting and thinking and talking through things together, you are engaged in assessment. So in every facet of my life, the areas that I assess become the things that I value. And I think this is true with most people. When we assess things, we value them. But also at the same time, we tend to assess the things we value. If you value money, you're going to be more likely to check your bank accounts and your retirement portfolio. If you value running, you're more likely to track your mileage, which in turn keeps you more focused on running. It becomes this reciprocal relationship between assessment and focus. And the more focused you get, the more you assess, the more you assess, the more you focus on certain behaviors. Now, the same phenomenon is true in teaching. We value what we assess, and we tend to assess what we value. A school might have a vision statement about developing lifelong learners who fall in love with learning. But when teachers keep data charts on reading fluency or on benchmark test scores, there's a higher likelihood that those teachers will teach to the test. Lifelong learning becomes a lofty goal. It doesn't mean teachers don't value it, but the frequent use of standardized tests can shift the focus away from the love of learning and toward solely focusing on academic achievement. Now, I would argue that students will achieve better and actually do better on those tests when they do love learning and when they're more focused. But what happens is we tend to value what we assess, and if we're not careful, that will reshape our behaviors as teachers. When we don't assess something, we tend to underemphasize it. Students in turn might internalize the message that this particular thing is less important. So while we may value creativity, if we don't assess it, we might neglect it. When I began as a self-contained teacher that was teaching all subjects, I was far more likely to neglect creative thinking in math and language arts. And that's because those two subjects had big benchmark tests. There were big district assessments we had to pass and we would be judged for it. And so I was much more likely to do creative work and student projects and PBL in areas where they were, I guess, under-tested or under-emphasized, like science and social studies. And what happened is that creative work became the thing that I would get to when we have time for it. But if I wasn't careful, I would treat creative work as a dessert rather than the main course. I was cautious about implementing PBL and any kind of projects in project-based learning until I could see that it led to higher achievement gains. In other words, the school-wide focus on test scores reshaped my teaching, and I was someone who was die-hard into project-based learning. So we have this reality. This is the first truth I want to share, that we value what we assess. If we fail to assess something, we are far more likely to neglect it. And it would seem then that teachers should assess student creativity. If we value creativity, we need to assess it. But then there's this second truth, that assessing creativity can actually backfire. When I first began crafting PBL units, I would create these rubrics that included a specific category for creativity. I wanted students to value creative thinking. So I would point to that section on that rubric and talk about the need for creative risk-taking. But then I noticed that certain students actually became risk-averse. What if their work wasn't creative enough? What if I gave them low scores? Students would ask for examples of a creative versus non-creative project. A few teams would pull me aside and say, "Hey, Mr. Spencer, is this creative enough?" Or simply, "Can you just tell me, is this what you're looking for?" By assessing creativity, I had turned creative thinking into something high stakes. Rather than focusing on the intrinsic enjoyment of the creative process, students were fixating on the extrinsic score of the rubric. They took fewer creative risks and engaged in less divergent thinking as a result. They were far more likely to copy the exemplars rather than find their own creative voice. In a few cases, this external pressure led to higher performance and better creative thinking, but in many cases, it actually led to worse creative work and lower performance. Even the ones who were fixated on creativity and worked harder, they were often defining creativity based on my standards. So I was left with these two dueling truths. On one hand, if I didn't assess something, I would neglect it. On the other hand, when I gave students a score on that the creativity of their work, it actually led to creative risk aversion, and they just weren't taking any creative risks. So at that point, I began to experiment with different ways of assessing creativity. And I eventually realized that the issue wasn't whether we should assess creativity, but more about the way we assess creativity. So I want to share three shifts in my thinking about how we assess creativity. See, over time, I began to shift away from having me assess the creative product and toward having students assess their own creative process. So from me to the students, and from product to process. I want to share these three different shifts. Number one, focus on the creative process rather than the product or the person. When I first added creativity to the project rubric, students were risk averse. I mentioned that. They were worried that their finished work wouldn't be, quote, creative enough. This fixation on the product actually led to a decrease in creative risk taking. And I've noticed the same thing is true in my own life. I'm a maker. I'm a creator. But if I try too hard to be creative, I end up doing exactly that, trying too hard. The end result is either something derivative, which is no fun, or something that is, I guess, overtly weird, but not that good. Now, this happens with avant-garde artists who try too hard to be different in their art. And the same thing is true with authors who get stuck in their own head trying to avoid anything cliche, and they end up making a novel that has no narrative structure and is just a dump of words that doesn't really make sense. There's a similar danger with people who self-assess how creative they are as people. You end up with people who say things like, "I'm not really the creative type." But here's the thing. There is no creative type. We're all creative, every single one of us. It's just that we need a bigger definition of creativity. If you check on this particular blog post that goes with this podcast, you'll see there's a sketch video I have about this bigger definition of creativity. But in general, it's things like divergent thinking, connective thinking, iterative thinking, ideation, original thinking, lateral thinking, problem solving, hands-on prototyping, artistic work, communicating key ideas, empathy, inquiry and curiosity, creative risk-taking, experimentation, data gathering. So instead of focusing on the creative product or even treating creativity as if it's some kind of inherent personal trait, we can reframe creativity as a process that focuses on all of those various elements. Now, that is by no means an exhaustive list. And at first glance, that list may seem like a list of creative thinking skills. And that's certainly a part of it. But these are also processes that students can master and mindsets that they can adopt. Empathy, problem solving, creative risk taking, these are all specific actions in the creative process. By focusing on this creative process, we move from conversations about your creative potential, which I know I mentioned creative potential in the intro to the show, but instead of focusing on what you could be, it becomes a focus on creative momentum. And creative momentum is simply what you're doing, the direction you're going in, and what you're learning and how you're improving. This is the idea that we don't have a fixed mindset or a fixed amount of creative potential. We're not limited by our innate drive for creativity. We're not tied to our, you know, creative personality. Instead, it's the idea that creative thinking is a skill we develop over time, that it's much more like a muscle that we can build as we do specific creative work. And so the shift number two is this idea of switching the focus to growth and improvement rather than achievement. Now, I once worked with a colleague, my friend Javi, and he's one of my best friends to this day, but he used to have his students share their epic fail at the end of a class period. Students would use a sentence stem, "My epic fail was blank, I learned blank, tomorrow I will try blank." And I loved this idea. This approach seemed to promote lower academic standards on the surface, but it was actually the opposite. He was valuing growth and improvement. It actually, in his case, led to higher student performance and students taking critical creative risks. Students internalized the difference between failure in failing. If we think about it this way, failure is permanent, but failing is temporary. It was the idea that you will fail forward. I remember walking in one day and I watched as Javi pulled his name out of a cup and he said, "Oh my gosh, Javi, is there a Javi? Is there a Javier here?" And then he stopped and said, "Oop, that's me." And then he got up in front of the entire class and he said, "My epic fail was how I taught vocabulary. Students were confused, and I learned that I need to simplify the process and make it more visible. Tomorrow, I'm going to try a TPR approach." Students then stood up and gave him a standing ovation. Now, in this moment, he was modeling humility, and that shaped his classroom culture. But he was also modeling creative risk-taking, and he was showing students what it means to have a growth mindset. And I think it's important to recognize that the best way to develop a growth mindset in students is to encourage them to have some slack. It's honestly raising the standards, but then giving the permission to make as many mistakes as it takes to get there. It's the idea that you need slack in order to have grit. Now, I want students to have a growth mindset around creativity. I don't want to see students define creativity as inherent or some kind of innate talent. So as we think about assessing creativity, I think it's really important that we focus on growth. So what does this mean? This might include a reflection or a self-assessment survey. It might also include comparing their creative work. Yes, I know it's not about work, but in order to see their process and examine their growth from one project to another. It might be a portfolio where they describe their creative process. If students are focusing on growth and improvement, they are likely going to do so with a critical eye. And the danger here is that that can lead to risk aversion as well. So how do we help students apply a critical lens without falling into self-doubt and self-defeat? Well, one way is to focus on assessment rather than grading. In other words, teachers can provide feedback on the creative process, but not give a specific grade to the assessment. Students will still value the feedback. You're still reminding them of what matters, and they will focus on the creative process, but they can do so without worrying about how they will be graded. In other words, I'm saying maybe it's okay to assess creativity, but not grade it. More broadly, I think it helps to think about what assessment strategies actually promote creative thinking. For example, the fixation on a single right answer in a multiple choice test might actually harm divergent thinking, but a concept map can lead to deeper connective thinking and even divergent thinking. Allowing students to revise and resubmit their work might actually lead to greater creative risk-taking because students will feel the freedom to make mistakes. All right, final idea, number three, third shift. Empower students to self-assess instead of depending on the teacher. When I look at that category with creativity in that rubric, I realized that students were looking externally for an evaluation, that it was entirely extrinsic. And not only that, they weren't going inward through self-reflection. By focusing on the creative process and focusing on feedback rather than grading, I was then able to assess student creativity in a way that still promoted creative risk-taking. But that wasn't the biggest thing. The biggest shift came in this last idea of encouraging students to engage in their own self-assessment. Here's what I mean. As we think about creativity, students can own the assessment process by reflecting on their creative thinking. They can fill out surveys on their creative process. they can create their own portfolios. But self-assessment doesn't always have to be in this zone of sort of evaluation. It also includes things like self-analysis and diagnosis, as students reflect on new ways to solve problems or different ways to engage in creative work. Here, the student focuses less on better and more on different. We might ask students questions like, is there a different way to solve a problem? Or even, how did your approach differ from your last approach the last time you tried to do this? But in some cases, assessment can even be descriptive and reflective. When students describe their creative process, it can take some of the judgment and the risk aversion out of the assessment process. Here they might document their creative process in the form of a video or podcast where they share what they're doing and what they're learning along the way. The bottom line is what we want is for students to own this process. We want them to have a sense of ownership and agency in their learning, especially around assessment. We want them to focus on growth rather than just performance. And we want them to focus on the process and journey rather than just looking at their finished products. When this happens, what we're doing is we're still telling them creativity is important. We're reminding them that creativity is important. We're assessing and giving feedback and having students give themselves feedback on creativity. So it stays at the forefront of what we do, but it happens in a way that does not lead to creative risk aversion. Hey, would you do me a favor? If you like this podcast, would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts? Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.